Hello, lacrosse friends. Welcome once again to Boxla Beat on NLL Radio, also available on iTunes through Inside Lacrosse Podcasts. I'm Stephen Stamp, your host and an editor at IL Indoor. Terrific show this week for you. I will speak with rookie sensation Austin Shanks of the Rochester Nighthawks, who are on a four-game winning streak and are the hot club in the East Division of the National Lacrosse League. But first, I will speak with Rich List, the GM of the New England Black Wolves, who sit in first place in the East. Even though they're a minus 27 in goal differential, they've been winning the games when it counts. They are 6-4, and we'll talk about the way the season is developing, the way the roster is coming together, and of course, the big trade of Sean Evans and a fourth-round pick for Callum Crawford and a second-round pick. And it's a really interesting discussion going behind the scenes, talking about what goes in to making a trade with such big name players this point of the season. We are 5 days away from the trade deadline. There's been a lot of activity already. There'll probably be more to come, but we will talk with Rich Lisk, followed by Austin Shanks, this week on Boxla Beat on NLL Radio. Joining me on Boxla Beat now from the first place New England Black Wolves, GM Rich List. You have to like the sound of that.
I do like the sound of that, Sam. Thank you. That sounded really good.
No, no problem. Now, what an interesting East Division. There's a lot of things to talk about here. I think I want to start just talking about this East Division and how, I mean, we go into the weekend, all five teams within, you know, a game and a half or so, and the Rochester-Georgia game with I thought the two teams that have been playing maybe the best going into the weekend, and you guys in Toronto, I mean, you can't get much more drama than we saw with a pair of overtime games, and I mean, what a weekend, and then we do it all again once it gets going. This is a tight race.
When was the last time the NLL saw that many one-goal games in the weekend, which was amazing? And believe it, coming from the guy sitting on the end of one of those, there was a nail biter. It was a great game. As a fan of the game, like I am and you are, yeah. It was a great game to watch. There was its highs and lows, and it was its drama. And those are the games that I said this to somebody else the other day. I almost wish we had a hockey-type thing. So I come from the hockey world, you know the hockey world, and those are almost like teams deserve at least a point out of that, and you don't get a point, like you just get the win or the loss, and that's it, and no team really, I mean, I'm happy that we came out on top, but either team really deserved that. I mean, Rosie played tremendously, Aaron Bolt matched him and played tremendously, They had lulls in offense, we had lulls in offense, they had good defensive stands, we had good defensive stands, so it was an exciting game, but you're absolutely right. I mean, here in the East, and every game is a playoff game. That's the way we look at it. Every game right now is like a playoff game, and you can't drop one because you never know what's going to happen. So we got to stay tight and try to take every game as its own individual playoff game.
I thought one of the interesting things about it, too, is, you know, it's an 8-7 game. You have a 8-7 game out in Colorado as well, an 11-10 game in Rochester, none of them really high scoring. I mean, you've got four of the six teams didn't even get above 10 goals, and it was thrilling lacrosse. I mean, you know, there's a certain excitement to a 17-16 game or whatever, but good, solid defensive lacrosse, I mean, if it's 17-16 because the guys are just incredible, that's one thing. But when it's an 8-7 game and it's just great defensive lacrosse and tough and a really solid game, I like that, I think, more than a higher scoring game.
Oh, I agree with you. And when was the last time you had so many goalies over an 800 save percentage as we did last week? But I agree with you. There was 10,000, close to 11,000 fans in that arena. And I have to say, and I tip my hat to Toronto, they did a great job. It was a fun atmosphere. Those fans walked out of there saying, I love this sport. Yeah. And if they didn't, then I don't know what else we could possibly do. But I agree with you. I'd rather have a game like that than the 17-16. Now, you know, I personally, our team hasn't had many 17-goal games, so I'm begging for one of those sooner or later. Yeah. I'm hoping it comes to my heart, a little rust. These one goal, these close games. But I think I might have said it to you when we were walking through the bath. I'd rather win every goal by one game than pray for a big lopsided win at one point. So a win to win.
Yeah, and I mean, probably more so for you than anyone right now, since you're sitting in first place with minus 26, is it? Goal differential?
Oh, yeah.
Minus 27.
I understand it, yeah. If you logically look at it, we're in first place. Not that I like to say.
If you
logically look at it, it's a little different, but we're in first place.
Yeah.
And we're happy about that.
Yeah.
I keep telling our guys, we've played good and we've played bad. Well, you and I have talked about this. When we played good, we played really, really bad. We played bad, we played really, really bad. And we haven't had many in-between games. And I have to believe after all the tinkering we've done and everything we've done and now that we're settling in, and I have a young D core back there. You got guys like Joel Coyle and Spanger, who were with us for half a year last year, and then I had Watkinson and Jokum and Bomberry, who was on and off practice rosters, and then you bring in John LaFontaine, who's new, and then you add him with Manny, and I bring in and Thornburg and Suddies, who were there, and then I bring in David Brock, who's new, and then Brocker gets hurt. It's been a little, and then we bring in Booker Muir, who had half a year with us. Our D isn't that veteran type D. I mean, we have some guys that are going to make some rookie mistakes and things, and they're going to play through, and I just don't believe we've gelled totally yet. And if I can sit here and say we haven't gelled and we haven't peaked yet and we're still at 6-4, I have to believe that eventually it's going to happen and we're going to gel and peak and we'll be in a good spot. It's a lot better than being 4-6.
Yeah, which would drop you from first to last is how tight it is.
Exactly. That's how tight this is.
Yeah. Now, to me, the interesting thing watching this game, and I mean, I know you gave me a hard time after the game saying you shouldn't have picked against us, and I was like, based on what you've done this year, I thought it was a reasonable pick.
I get fired up, right?
Yeah, I know.
I'm a competitive person like everybody else.
Yeah.
I last week saw all the guys pick against us. There wasn't one person that picked us.
Yeah.
So, you know what? That's some good locker room fodder. So I used it, and I used it to our guys, and I used it as locker room fodder. And in my note to them, I write a note to the team every week in my itinerary. And I have to say that I use that as motivation. And we're all competitive. I just can't be on the field playing. I'm off the field on the other side of the glass.
Yeah.
So, yes, not yelling in the press box, I know, is a rule, and I broke it. Yes, I know I leaned out and said, don't pick against us. But I was fired up.
Yeah. Well, and, it's interesting. I mean, that's on IL Indoor, where I'm an editor, and my co-editor, Bob Chavez, actually collects the votes on the picks for the staff picks. So I don't know until Friday afternoon or whenever he posts it who everyone's picked. So I saw it that everyone had picked Toronto. I was like, that made me uneasy because whenever that happens, it doesn't seem to go well for us. And another example.
I get it. I almost tweeted out Black Wolves won. People who picked against Black Wolves last week 0 on my Twitter thing, but I let it go.
That'd be fair, too. That'd be fair. Now, to me, the interesting thing about it was watching that game, you talked about the team not gelling, and I want to talk about some specific players in the back end especially, and of course the new addition, Callum Crawford, but to me, it's been watching you guys, you can see the process of a team coming together and a team starting to gel. But that, to me, was the first game where it looked really like a cohesive unit kind of throughout the game. And you had long stretches where you didn't score. And, I mean, Nick Rose was fantastic. But I thought that was the most cohesive you've actually been yet.
I agree with you, and we talked about this afterwards. And I sit down as the GM and talk to the coaches every week, and I'm like, man, one day we had the righties playing really well, but we didn't have the lefties in the transition playing well. Then, man, we had the lefties playing well, and the righties didn't score. Then, man, we had transition playing well, and the other guys didn't score. And then D was playing well, and O wasn't getting off the floor in time. And Bowlby had a bad game, or Jamison had a bad game, which happens throughout the year.
Yep.
And I believe, and I agree with you, that I think this was our most complete game that we saw. I would have liked to score more, but there were guys that were in some slumps, right?
Mm-hmm.
Kevin Cannon was out the week before on the short-term holdout list, but hasn't really been the Kevin Buchanan that we've expected him to be from the past, where he's had two career years the last couple of years. And he was in a slump, and he was just, he and I sat all week and talked about it. And he's like, Rich, I feel like I'm getting good looks, but they're hitting the pipe, or they're hitting this, or I'm a little gun shy on this one. And I was so happy for him personally. Because he's such a good guy, and he's a really good ambassador for the Black Wolves, and I was just so happy to see him break out. So now, I looked at myself and said, okay, Kevin Crowley's having a very good year, a really good year, and now, you know, without Sean being here and Callum coming, he'll step into a different role, and Callum has had a good game, I thought, for his first game with us, and he added a dimension to us that I don't think we've had in the past, and now, even though, like, when Callum's in the lineup, and now Kyle Buchanan's the first guy off the bench with the ball, Kyle's different than Evie.
Right.
So you get a different look like that. And you saw Kyle in a different role. You saw Callum, you saw Crowley in a different role. And then we added Johnny Palace the last couple of weeks, and he had a good game with us in Vancouver. But that's a tough team for Johnny to play against, too, right? Because they stack down a lot, and he's an inside guy. And he had a couple looks, and he hit a post here. I think he hit a crossbar in a post, or hit Rosie in the chest on one. So he had his looks. But that's a tough team for him to step in on his second game with a new team.
Right.
And then Stefan, I think, has been a great pickup for us. And I think that was a win-win trade for both teams when I watched Sheldon play against us, which hurts me to see a guy like Sheldon, because I really, really enjoy Sheldon as a person and a player. But he's playing well for them, and Steph's playing well for us. So I think when we put all this stuff together, now these guys practice a little bit more together, they play a little bit more together, you'll start seeing it gel even more and more.
Yeah. So I want to make one point about the Kevin Buchanan game, because it was, you could tell he was feeling more comfortable, and he got the first two goals and then switched hands when he picked up his own rebound, switched to righty and put one in. And that, to me, was saying he's feeling comfortable and he's getting there, which is great for him. Yeah. Now, Callum Crawford, you said after the game he'd had a good game, and watching him, I thought he had an okay game. He did bring some things that you didn't have. I thought 23 shots to me seems like a lot.
Exactly.
And especially the one.
That's a lot of shots.
Yeah. And we talked after the game. I mentioned the one that I had me tearing my hair. Just, you know, as a neutral observer, just seeing Callum late in a penalty, about 17 seconds left, and he goes to the net and takes it behind the back into Rosie's chest, and they get a break, a 3-on-2 break, and a great scoring chance. And I know, I mean, you guys agree that that was not the shot you want.
Yeah, you know, I guess it wasn't, and it isn't, right? You and I think you were the one that said it. If it goes in, you're kind of like, oh, okay, it went in.
Yeah.
And it didn't go in, so you're like, oh, it didn't go in.
Yeah.
And I look at it like this. I'm going to look at the totality of Callum's game,
right,
and not those little things. And I look at how the future of our offense will look with Callum.
Right.
And listen, you've played sports, I've played sports. You've been traded, you got something to prove. He's been traded twice, right, in this year, really off season this season.
Right.
He's got something to prove. He wants to come in and say, you know, you guys made the right decision. So is he going to shoot more? Probably, yeah.
Yeah.
Is he trying to feel out his new teammates? And you saw some errant passes and some missed balls, and that's going to take them gelling. So, the fact that he took those shots, they were good shots. He hit a couple of pipes on a couple. He had some good looks, I think, and Clarky and I were talking about it. I think the first time he beat somebody, he got a really good look, and then he kind of pulled it out and tried to do it something else,
right,
which makes him a very dynamic player. So I think a few of those he probably could have shortened up and just took a shot, and who knows what would have happened.
Yeah.
But on the overall totality of his game, even that one where we were down, I think we were on the man down, and he took a shot, got his own rebound, walked the line, came by, tried to put a backhander in, like, Those are things that will only get better as time goes on.
Yeah.
So I was very happy with how he played. I was happy he got the monkey off his back and get that goal. That's what you want, right? I mean, he wants to come in and score that goal and prove to everybody. And I don't mind having a guy who has a chip on his shoulder and wants that. I mean, I'm looking forward to it. And I think even he and I have talked a lot afterwards and during the week, and he's looking forward to playing with these guys. Yeah. So overall totality of it, yeah, I was happy with his game. I think it can only get better from here, and the more he gets comfortable.
Yeah. I'd like to talk a bit about the process of making a trade, because it's not easy. I mean, Graham Perro posted on NLL Fact of the Day that of the top 15 scorers in NLL history right now, 6 are active and 3 were traded in the last 2 weeks. And, that's pretty fascinating. And when you see a Sean Evans and a Callum Crawford traded, those are 2 high-impact players. I know you'd mentioned when you got him that you'd been keeping an eye on him and had some interest. How does something like that play out through the course of a season when it is such big names involved?
Sure. So I'll go back a couple of years. So before we got Sean here, Tom Crawford was a free agent. And he and I had a lot of discussions about coming here. Well, we had a couple of discussions about it. Mm-hmm. And when the free agent period began, I was a bidder on Gallum at that point. I got outbid for whatever reason. It made a better sense for him in his personal life to go to Colorado. Mm-hmm. The process that I went through with Callum, I was very impressed with him as a person. I was very impressed in how he handled it. He was very, very professional to deal with, and it was a tough decision. He came back and gave me his reasons, and again, his personal reasons. I'll accept anyone who makes a decision for their family and where they should go is all right in my book. And he went there, and that was fine. Then, sometimes the deals you don't make are some of the better deals. Mm-hmm. And we didn't bring in Callum 2 years ago, and then I started having discussions with Mike Board, and we needed at that point an identity. And we needed somebody. We needed that it factor. And then Mike Board and I started talking, and Sean wanted to come east, and we could work out a deal. And that was a very intricate, mm-hmm. intricate deal, the kind of between 3 teams. And in the process of that, people don't realize, too, that I also signed Derek Suttons, which I thought was a very good signing for us. Yeah. And the week before we got Sean, we actually brought Kevin Crawley back.
Yeah.
So there was a lot of moving parts that month, and spent a lot of sleepless nights trying to get that done. And so I can't, thank Sean Evans enough for what he did for his organization, mm-hmm. How he came in and represented us, how he made us relevant, quote unquote, gave us that it factor, had some good years with us. And then you get to the point where you're starting to evaluate, and I think Clarkie said it best, we're winning, we're up a couple games, and then we lose, and our offense, as you said, we weren't playing very well on the offensive side, and we were kind of squeaking by and getting the job done, but that wasn't good enough. So what do? You can't sit on your hands and hope that that works, because in my life, hope isn't a strategy. So we explore, and what can you explore? Who's here? Who's there? Who's not? And then so I started talking to teams and putting out there, hey, I might be looking for offensive help. And I happened to have a conversation with Chugger, and I have a lot of respect for Chugger and everything he's done in this world. He's one of my, good confidants, and we had a discussion. He said, yeah, I'm looking for this. And he wanted that gritty, never say die type attitude. He was looking for what Sean brings to the table. Mm-hmm. And he said, what are you looking for? And I wanted to get a little more athletic, a little bigger over there, change something up. I needed to change something up in how we played. And when we kind of got done with the conversation, I don't know if he said it or I said it, I think I know who you're talking about. And I go, I just made sense after we explained what we both wanted.
Yeah.
I had the player he wanted and he had the player I wanted. That made sense for our teams at that time.
Mm-hmm.
And so after a few more talks and some negotiations and some of the picks that we had talked about, it came down to it, are you ready to make the move? And I said, yeah, I think my team is ready to do it. And he said, okay, I think my team is ready to do it. And that was it. And that's how we consummated that deal. And we'll see. Sean, played his first game with them. I really think it's not fair to judge it a little bit because he kind of flew in the day of and played in Denver. So, he has to practice with the team. And play. So I think this week, and Callum, the same thing, he had an off week and a new team and 1-2 practices with us. So as time goes on, we'll see. Everyone's going to try to pick apart this trade as much as possible, like who won, who didn't, who won, who didn't. We're happy with our side. We were happy with how Callum played and how our offense looked differently, especially with the other pieces we brought in. So I hope, you know, Buffalo is the same way when it's all said and done. It's a small fraternity of guys that we have here, so you never want to, you know, you want to make sure that it's equal and win-win for everybody. And if they're happy, we're happy. That's a good trade for both of us. I can tell you that after our first go-around here, and you said it earlier, that was the first time we really looked like we were gelling. And it added a different dynamic for us. Like I said before, like even taking Sean out of the mix and having Kyle be the first guy out of the bench gives you a different look. Is that and nothing against Sean, but maybe that's the look we need to jumpstart this offense. And having Callum being, you know, he's a bigger, more imposing type guy, and maybe having that is going to help jumpstart. Our offense wasn't clicking the way we wanted it to be, and we needed to do something. And we brought back a quality piece, and we let go of a quality piece. Sometimes you have to do that there to jolt it and figure out if this is the right way to do it.
And that's a very interesting and thorough and diplomatic approach and description. I really appreciate that. Now, you had a bit more direct when we were talking before, where you pointed out that, you know, everyone's going to look and pick who wins and who loses and in a trade like that. And you were saying that basically everything you'd heard was that you lost the trade, according to the court of public opinion.
According to public opinion, if you go out there, you people think that we lost the trade. And so be it. Everyone's opinions are their opinions. I have my opinions, you have your opinions, Glenn Clark has his opinions, Sean and Callum and everybody, they all have their opinions. And the only thing that will change people's opinions, and if they do, they do. If they don't, they don't. I mean, that's not, I can't live my life based on other people's opinion. What I could live my life on is that we needed to do something. We weren't going to sit on our hands. We identified how we wanted to play. You identify a piece that could fit into that how you want to play. And sometimes you have to give up a big piece to get a piece that you think will make your team better and make you play the way you want to play. And that's what it came down to. Again, those naysayers, that's their opinion, and that's fine, and that's what makes the world go around, and that's what keeps this sport alive that we all love and everything, and we'll see how it's at the end.
I can tell you, you're not the only National Lacrosse League GM this week who has said to me, hey, maybe I actually know what I'm doing.
I don't know. We'll see. I mean, I just know when I sit every week with my coaches and we talk about how we want to play and how we want to represent this organization and the kind of player and the kind of person we want here. And there's a lot of things that go into bringing a player on the field, off the field, everything. And I feel like, and every day I say this to Glenn Clark, after I traded Sheldon Burns for Stephon LeBlanc, that was a hard trade for me because I drafted Sheldon and we became close and I like Sheldon. But again, you have to give up a piece to get a piece. And we needed a lefty at that point. And Stephon was, in my opinion, an elite lefty in the league. I said to Glenn, did I make us better today? And he said, yep, you made us better today. And then when we traded for Johnny Palace, and, you know, you're giving up some picks and future and things. But I think that's a good trade for us. Johnny is a young guy who added the dimension that we needed. And I said to Glenn, did I make us better today? He said, yeah. And then when we did the whole thing with Callum and Sean, that was really, if people don't realize, there was a few that were hard to do. That was really, really hard because as the quote-unquote, and I hate using this because I like to look at the team as the entirety and not one person, but as the quote-unquote, like people have said, he's the face of our organization, I became close with Sean. And I consider Sean a friend, and we've had a lot of discussions, and that's hard. Like, people don't realize, you know, we have to separate getting on a friendly basis with the players and getting to know them and their families and spending weekends and travel together. And then you got to separate it out to what do we think is going to make the team the best and the organization. And I say that to Glenn all the time. His job is to worry about the team, and my job is to worry about the organization, which is two separate things. So that call and that move was hard to make. But when I sat with my coaches and our owners and Mike and Brad and Glenn and Clem and Tracy, and we thought we needed to do something, we all believe that this was the move to make us better and not sit on our hands and do something, and we did it.
It's an interesting one because I think with Sean Evans, I mean, I saw Buffalo fans posting, no, don't do this. They hate Sean Evans based on having played against him. And I think they will love him pretty quickly, even though they all said, no, it'll never happen. I remember seeing one guy who said, oh, you know, he doesn't play like a bandit. He's not a bandit, this and that. And I said, he's in your face, never say die, gritty as heck, will do anything to win, tough, maybe goes over the edge a few times. How is not a bandit? But, I mean, if they knew him off the floor, he's a great guy. Like, I think Sean, and there are times I watch, I've been friends with Sean for years, and there are times I watch him on the floor and I shake my head and I think, oh, Evie. But he's a great guy. You know what I mean?
Well, he is, and it's hard. It's hard as a GM. It really is. Like, people don't realize we're people too, right?
Yeah.
And we have emotions and feelings, and we talk to all the guys, and you want to have a good relationship with them. But then there's that hard decision that you have to make. And again, I always come back to, we needed to do something to our offense. We weren't just going to sit on our hands and we added these pieces, and we wanted to play a different way. The way we wanted to play, more athletic, bigger, blah, 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 whatever that is, Callum fit that piece. I'm not going to trade, you know, a third-round pick for Callum Crawford, so we got to come to an agreement on what they were looking for.
Yeah.
And it just so happened that two willing partners saw each other that said, I'm looking for this type, you're looking for that type. It might make some sense. And you know, we came out of it, too, with a second-round pick in a big draft, so we're happy with that.
Yeah.
And you got to look towards expansion and who you're going to protect and who you're not, and you need picks and all that stuff. So there's a lot that goes into it.
Yeah.
It's just not a flippant decision.
Yeah.
And I think that's sometimes where my passion comes in.
Right.
But, you know, you listen to the naysayers and people say that. But again, they're not in the rooms with us, and they're not thinking about what we're thinking and stuff.
Yeah.
They're not living it every day. Mm-hmm. When you do, you have a different opinion than people that don't.
Speaking of draft picks, there's another player I do want to address, and that's Anthony Jokum, who you took, I believe, eighth overall. And I thought through the early part of the season, I saw him struggling quite a bit to get used to the NLL, to get used to the pace, to get used to the working as part of your unit and things. And, I mean, I've talked to you. I've talked to Glenn Clark. I've seen him play in the Arena League. I thought Saturday may have been his best game. And over the last couple games, it seems to be clicking for him. He's starting to look like the guy that you were expecting to get when you drafted him. Not that you expected him to be like that right away, because that's the one thing I think players get given up on in this league pretty quickly. And obviously you guys showed the patience, right, to let him develop. And next year I think is going to be a really good year for him. I think down the stretch he's going to be good. But that's a story of a guy who wasn't ready to step in and play every shift right away, but now already is, to me, looking like an awfully good player.
You know what? I agree with you on a lot of that. We really like Jokes. Yeah. And Jokes has a history, right? He's played with Glenn and Clem at the beach and stuff like that. So we had a different scouting report on him than maybe some other people. We got to know him as a person. He went to St. Joe's with Taylor Ray as his coach, who's an ex-wing player and stuff. So we know what he got there. We really liked him. Our goal was to get into the top 10. And as high as we could get into the top 10 to take him. That was always my plan going into the draft was, if we get nothing else at 8, we believe Anthony Jokum will be there, and we will take Jokum there. And then we made a move to bring up and get Colton Watkinson. So the week before the draft, a couple weeks before the draft, I said to all our guys, give me your wish list. And the wish list was, a week they came out of there with, in the first 10, I think it was Watkinson, Jokum, and I think we took Keeley at 10.
Yeah.
If we could come out of there with those guys, we'd be set. And then we took up Tchaikovsky, which we never thought, and stuff like that. So we were happy we had him slated there. But you're right. I think he struggled a little bit, mentally too. As you get picked eighth, you come out of camp, you start on the practice squad. There's a little bit of a disappointment there. Mm. Handled it like a pro. Went to the practice squad, said, give me some time so I could figure things out. We made the move for Sheldon and Stefan. He came in and took Sheldon's spot, which, if we didn't believe in him and think he had the potential, you don't make that Sheldon Burns move.
Right.
And things. So that's another avenue where I don't know if everyone thinks about. We have some depth there. We believe in this kid. Comes in. Yeah. Go growing pains, right? You're taking a rookie, you're putting them in, and it's a lot different playing in the summer, a lot different playing in college, it's a lot different playing in camp than it is when the bell rings and it's ready for the prime time.
Yeah.
And struggled a little bit. We sat and talked with him. He's a sponge. He absorbs. He comes to practice. He works on what he needs to work on. And I agree with you, and we just had this talk Monday with all the coaches. I thought that was his best game for us. You see his anticipation. You see him getting a little more aggressive. And that's what we're trying to say with jokes, too. You're a big guy. You can get up and down the floor. Like, be aggressive. Get up and down the floor. Use your speed. Use your body. You know, and juniors, he scored 19 goals once from the transition. Use your scoring. Just get some of that aggression. I think sometimes when young guys come in, they want to make a mistake so badly that they don't take a chance either.
Yeah.
And that works against you too, right? Because they got to feel their way out. This guy's a little quicker than I thought. Oh, wait, that guy's a little stronger than I thought.
Right.
Oh, wait, this game's a little faster than I thought. And he's starting now to have that upswing. You see him on the upswing. The problem would be is if you saw a downswing.
Right.
We have not seen a downswing. Every game he's getting better and better, and I think this was his best game. And, and you saw it. Like, he was more aggressive on the boards. He was picking the ball up. He was getting up the floor. He had a nice shot on goal.
Yeah.
He did a lot more things that we see. And his anticipation is amazing. He almost picked off two passes.
Yeah.
And that's another thing that we really like. So I think there's, and I agree with you, I think there's a learning curve there, and he's on the upswing. But in the next couple of years, you know, that's what you want to do. You want to get these young guys, and you live through the rookie quote unquote mistakes. I hate using that, but that's what it is. Young guy mistakes, and sometimes you have some bad games like we've had because you got some young guys. But in the next year or two down the road, now Watkinson's a third year guy, and Joker's a third year guy, and Coyle and Spanier and Booker Meir are fourth year guys, and now they're playing at the level you need them to play at, and they played together for 3 years. That's really what you look at, the process. And if they could get through this area, which they're doing very well, then we're going to be in good shape.
With Joakim going into the draft, I was curious where I knew you guys wanted to get him. I mean, it was fairly obvious he played with Clam and Glenn, and I knew you guys had interest. I wasn't sure how high you would go, but the thing for me was he didn't have a good summer last year, I thought, either. And you nailed it when you said it was a bit tentative. He wasn't as aggressive as he can afford to be, and that's exactly what I saw in the summer as well when he was playing with Brampton. And what a turnaround in these last few games. It does definitely point upward for the trajectory.
I mean, think about it. Go back to when you were graduating college, and life is about to hit you in the face, and you're not living in a dorm, and you're not playing college lacrosse, and you're a Canadian kid, and you're going to go home, and your future lies within finding a job and playing professional lacrosse.
Yeah.
That's a lot that goes into thinking. Like, I have a 23-year-old son, and I have an 18-year-old son, and a 20-year-old daughter, and I go through it now with their thought process and things. So, you know, I think sometimes when people look at that, and some people look at it as just X's and O's. X's and O's. And I try to look beyond the X's and O's and get to know the person and the player and see if they have it. And if they don't, and you can tell if they do. And we spent a lot of time with jokes and talk to them. And again, I look at people, and this is where I try to meld it with our coaches. Like, they want what's good on the floor, and I want what's good on the floor too, but I also look what's good off the floor. And if you're going to be a good representative of ours, if you're going to be a good ambassador, if you're a good person, and jokes is all of those. And if it takes a little while for him to get used to it, like, it's hard being in a young 20-something-year-old head and getting his confidence. And you just stick with them and nurture them, and now you're starting to see the fruits of the labor come along. And in a few more years, we'll see more fruits of the labor. And that's what we're looking for. And I think that's another aspect that people don't realize. Yes, I want to win today, like everybody else does. I want to hoist the cup at the end of the year. But I also want to hoist the cup at the end of the fourth year, and the fifth year, and the third year, and the sixth year. So you gotta wave some waves sometimes when you're doing that.
I really appreciate you taking the time. It's a fun conversation, and it's great to have kind of a look behind the curtain. And, you know, maybe it'll make people think a little bit more about more of the X's, O's, more of the moving parts when they're thinking about grading or judging what GMs do in the future. Probably not, but maybe.
Maybe. That's fine. Listen, if it's going to anybody else and if everyone wants to pick against us this week, I'd be happy too, so that's fine.
Well, appreciate the time. Always always have fun talking with you, and good luck down the stretch of the season. It's getting that time, right?
No, I appreciate it. Thank you, and I appreciate what you do for the sport and for the NLL and everything, and I appreciate your thing. So, again, this was great. Anytime you need.
Joining me on Box LaBeat, the second leading rookie scorer in the National Lacrosse League this year, Austin Shanks. Welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
So it's been a pretty exciting year. I mean, you get drafted fifth overall by Rochester, and a little bit of a slow start for you, sitting out a couple of games. You must have been just chomping at the bit to get going on the season.
Yeah, I was just waiting to get in and kind of get my chance. We have a great offense all the way around, and we returned a full set of offensive veteran guys. So I just kept working hard and just waited for my chance to get in.
Once you did, you looked pretty comfortable. It didn't seem to take long. I thought watching, I mean, I predicted you as the rookie of the year in our IL indoor preseason predictions, because I thought that what you'd been doing, especially last summer in Brooklyn in the Major Series Lacrosse League, would really translate well. And it feels like it has. Like, it seems like you've been able to carry over the development that you made in junior in the summer into the Winter League.
Yeah, I believe so too, and I think that was a confidence thing, playing with the players I did in senior. You kind of go into the league with a good core group of the same guys you played with and against. So I kind of just stuck to my game, playing my game, and I feel like I could definitely ramp up my game. I don't think I've played my best lacrosse yet this season, and I'm excited for the future.
Just to give anyone who's not familiar with Brooklyn an idea of those guys you're talking about, over the 2 years there, I mean, you've played with Mark Matthews, Shane Jackson, Riley O'Connor, Curtis Knight, Dan Lintner, Kyle Matisse, was he there?
Yeah, Kyle Matisse. Yeah.
Sean Williams for one game.
Quite the team in there.
Yeah.
Sean Williams, yep.
Yeah. And Dyson Williams.
Yep, Dice was up for a game.
Yeah. 16-year-old, and he scored six goals?
Yeah, I think he did. I was actually gone that game.
Right.
I wish I was there, but he had a hell of a game.
Yeah, and the one cool thing, one of the first goals of the game was, I think it might have been the first goal, was Sean Williams setting up Dyson for a goal.
Yeah, it was.
Yeah, and then Dyson had a penalty shot, too. Game. Yeah.
It was pretty special.
Yeah. So you get to Rochester, you get to camp, and, you know, there's a lot of young guys. You look just from last year when they had, you know, Kyle Jackson and Josh Currier added up front, and then this year they bring in you and Eric Fennell, of course, Jake Withers in the back end as well. So a lot of moving pieces, a lot of different players for the guys who had been there to get used to. Plus, Corey Vitarelli missed a good chunk of last year, so he's kind of coming back into the mix. Must have been a lot of moving pieces, a lot of familiarizing for you guys to do with each other.
There definitely was. Like you said, Kyle Jackson and Currier and Laskowitz and Lomas were all first years last year. They're all in the mix. Then me and Snow came in brand new. None of us have ever played together. Vitarelli came back. Jammer came back. So there's a lot of new pieces to that offense compared to 3 years ago. So I think that was the start of the year. We started real hot, and then we kind of went into a little rut there. I think we just needed to get used to each other and keep grinding and just figure each other out. And I think we have. You look at our offense, I think our offense has been playing great lately. And that's just playing together, getting some more practice, and find each other's chemistry.
One of the things that you have to learn when you're playing at any level, but especially in the pro league where the balance of talent is so level that you can't get too high or too low, and it's a challenge when you come out and score like 20 goals a game in the first, or 18, whatever it was, in the first couple of games. And I don't think I don't think you were as good as those two games. I don't know if anybody's as good as those two games made you look. But then you have a six-game losing streak. You said a little rut. I mean, six games is a substantial streak. But as Cody Jameson said after the game on last weekend, you know, you were close in some of those games. It's not like you're a 2-6 team. But ultimately, you are what your record says you are. You were a 2-6 team. So then you have to be careful not to let that get you down and just keep believing. And now you've got four in a row and wins. And you have to make sure you're not too high. I mean, it's – and with so many young players, I guess you're really looking to the veterans for some leadership in that area just to kind of keep things calm, as well as, of course, Coach Mike Hazen.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, on any team, you're going to look to the veterans, and we have an incredible coaching staff all the way around. So us young guys, we look up to those guys, and honestly, they do their job without us even asking. They're always the ones speaking and letting us know and coaching us up. And at the same time, I think we've all been through that. Like, Wiz just came back from a Man Cup. I've won a Minto. The three of us were in a NCAA National Championship last year. So we've all been there. We've all been the veterans on the team. So I think it's just the next level veterans. And it's just keep grinding through. And like you said, you can't be too high. And especially us right now, I think a lot of people are on, think we're very high right now because we have the four-game win streak. But really, we just fought our way back into the battle. So if we can't be too high in any game right now, we need to keep battling. These next six games are huge, and I think the playoffs start now.
Yeah, I mean, you're, as of right now, you're in a playoff spot in the third spot in the East. You're just a game back of first, as you sit in third, but you're also half a game ahead of Toronto and just a game ahead of Georgia, who, as you saw the other night, is a very good team. And I mean, one inch of a ball going the other way and they win the overtime game and you're sitting a game behind them in last place. So obviously, as much as it must feel great to have the winning streak going and be in a playoff position, you clearly know that it's not, the work is not done.
No, not even close. We just battled all the way there just to get back in the battle, really. So our battle is just starting now, and like I said, I think we're in the playoffs now. Like, playoffs, every game matters now.
It was unprecedented to see three players from the same college taken by the same team in the first round of a draft happening last fall. Of course, you mentioned you and Jake Withers and Eric Fennell all playing for Ohio State, all going to the championship, and that obviously gives you a level of familiarity and a comfort level having a couple of your teammates from the Buckeyes there. But, I mean, how does it feel just to have that group of guys traveling from Columbus here?
It was definitely pretty cool, especially on draft day. And then us, all three of us, making it on the active roster, I think that was pretty special. It was just cool. It's something that not a lot of people, I guess no one's really ever done. And it was just, we could just hang out like we're buddies again, like we were at college and back home. So, like, we all knew each other before college. And then me and actually Fennell, we were transfers into Ohio State. So we kind of came together there. And then we went on to the pros together. So that was pretty special and pretty cool. And I've lived with both of them at college. And now we all live together in Rochester. So we all became super tight, and we were pretty close-knit before that. And it was a whole new experience, and it made it a little bit more fun, I think. You weren't kind of going into training camp, not knowing anyone, and to all go together and have the same experience and talk to each other about what we feel and what it was like. So that was pretty cool.
How long were you in Ohio State? Was it 2 years? Or?
Yeah, I was there junior and senior year.
Yeah. And Eric, the same? Was he a two-year guy as well?
Yep. Yeah, he came in junior year with me.
So long enough to have it well established, and especially when you go through a run to a championship game like you guys did, it's there's a special bond that develops.
Yeah, you never forget that. And we were all in the same U16 team Ontario team. Right. And we had to come back. We had a huge final game against BC that we won by a goal. So we're all part of a championship before that. So you never forget those kind of guys. And me and Wiz played box teamo together 2 years. So we've all played with each other. And I played against Peterborough 2-3 times a year, being from Whippy, and played against St. Catharines, against Fennell a few times. And in junior, we played against each other all the time. So we've always been around each other for the last 10, 11 years, either with each other or against each other every year, no matter what. So to be able to stick together is pretty cool.
And it's a small world in the lacrosse world. I mean, you look at the Rochester lineup, and just I'm thinking specifically defenders, because they're the guys that you're actually playing against directly. I mean, you've played with Graham Hossack, obviously, but you know, so many guys. Yeah. Named Ian Lord and Dylan Evans and Withers and that in Peterborough. And some guys from, yep, Six Nations in Paul Dawson and Sid Smith. And, I mean, there's a lot of guys that you faced even last year in the NMSL and in the MSL playoffs when you faced a bunch of those guys.
Yeah, definitely. Especially like Billy D. Smith and, yeah, Ian Lord, those guys are lefties. So they actually re-battled every game. And I remember, you always remember playing against Billy.
Yeah.
But me and Lord, he had a pretty good battle going on. During that playoff run, so it was pretty funny to come to a team and you kind of go into the room not knowing much about people or anything. And now I love all those guys, and it's gonna be weird going back to senior playing against them, but I guess that's just the way the game is. And it's cool to meet those guys outside of lacrosse and hating them and wanting, yeah, to hurt them, right? So
yeah,
it's pretty cool to meet them as a person and see that they're all good guys.
Well, I think Ian Lord and Billy D. Smith are perfect examples of that, because Lord is a rough and tough player, and Billy D. is known as, you know, one of the toughest guys to play against ever in lacrosse. And now you have them on your side. Obviously, you love them. And the thing with both of them, I mean, Ian Lord, terrific guy, pretty quiet, you know, good, really good guy. And Billy D. Smith, honestly, is one of the funniest and nicest people you'll ever meet. And, you know, you try and say that to people who've been fans of teams he's played against, and they find it hard to imagine, because he's so hated on the floor. And he does stuff on the floor, frankly, that sometimes I've gone to him like, Billy, what were you doing there? And he's like, I don't know, I'm just playing, man. I'm just but he's such a good guy.
That's actually 100% true. It's funny because I've become close with most of the offensive guys on a personal level. Definitely the whole team, but mostly offense. I'm with them every time I practice, right?
Right.
Film. But I've become super close with Billy out of all the defenders the most. He's an incredible guy off the field. He took me under his wing. We always talk, and he's always looking out for me, and he's been an incredible veteran leader for me over this year.
And, I mean, when I mentioned the guys, the changes this year, I didn't even mention Cody Jameson. Luckily, you brought him in. But him coming back has been huge. And, I mean, watching him early in the season, he clearly wasn't the jammer that we all knew. And you wouldn't expect him to be after a year and a half recovering from two injuries to the same knee. I mean, one that never really fully recovered, and then having the surgery. And he came back and kind of worked his way in, was still putting up some assists just from being part of the offense, but it's just gotten better and better. And it feels like it's the last three or four games, really pretty much in the winning streak that you've established, where he's really come into his own. And I thought last weekend was vintage jammer. And I mean, the one pass that he lobbed off the backboards to hit Josh Currier and set him up for a dunk goal was just unbelievable creativity and execution. I'm not sure if people realize how hard that play is to lob a pass, make sure the guy that you're passing it to realizes what you're doing, land it up on the glass. So, because if you hit the dasher or the if you hit the boards, it bounces really low. If you hit the dasher, it bounces up and away. It's got to hit the glass, come down, and you've got to get it just the right spot so it's not going to handcuff him. And I don't know if Jammer could have walked over and placed it in Josh Currier's stick any better.
Yeah, exactly. And like you said, like the last four games, Jammer's been definitely one of his better. He's getting better every game. It's crazy seeing him every game. Like last game, he's turned the corner like he used to and really firing that ball. He's one hell of a player, and it's pretty cool to be on his side now after seeing him as senior so much, playing against him. But like you said, like that four-game win streak kind of started when he picked up his game more, and that's just the type of player he is, right? He's a leader. He's the quarterback of our offense, and he's going to help. He's going to be a big reason to get us. He got us over that hump, and he's going to bring us along the way.
Yeah, I mean, I still think what he did 2 years ago was probably as great an extended athletic performance as I've ever seen. When he went out,
come back for playoffs, and the man.
Yeah, when I mean they were down.
Yeah, I know
3-0. down 3-0 to Peterborough, and he wasn't playing because he hurt himself against you guys against Brooklyn in the semis, and then you know plays against Peterborough when they're down 3-0, and there's no way any team in MSL should be coming back from a 3-0 deficit to beat another team because the teams are so good. I mean, whether it's Brooklyn or Six Nations or Oakville or Peterborough, even Brampton and Coburg, who are kind of the lower level teams right now, it's hard to beat them four times in a row. And he did it. And then the Man Cup, he sits out a game and they lose. And he just went to Rich Kilgore and said, I'm coming back. I'm playing. And Rich told me that in the MSL finals, he was like, I don't know. Like Jammer had been trying for a game or two. And I was like, no, I don't know. I don't want you to hurt it further. And finally, Cody just said, looked at him after game three and said, I'm playing. And Rich was like, okay. And in the Man Cup, he didn't even try to argue with him. He just said, okay. And the thing to me was like, I'm watching, I'm calling the play-by-play for those games. And if you're watching on screen, you'd see what he did in the offensive zone. And you think he looks pretty good. Like it's maybe a little hitch to his step, but it's when he was going back to the bench and the camera's not on him. I'd follow him sometimes. And he was dragging that knee to the bench. He could barely move going off the floor. It was superhuman.
Yeah. It was a pretty special performance. I remember watching that because I was actually at OSU. They just beat us out. Uh-huh. We had a very good team that year, too, when they beat us. And then Jake was my roommate, so he was playing for Peterborough. So me and Fennell, we bought every game and watched them. And when they went up 3-0, we thought it was a wrap. And then Chandler came back and did his thing. That's what he does. He takes over, and it was pretty special. He's a special player, and I'm just trying to soak up everything that he says and does around me, and it's just a good guy to learn from.
And he's a good guy, and it's funny because a few weeks ago I was in Rochester for one of your games, and you were playing Saskatchewan. I was doing sideline reporting, and I had an interview set up with Cody for halftime, and I went out on the floor, and you guys all go over to Vino, and you're walking back in, and I was like, Cody, can I just grab you for a quick interview? And he just shook his head and kept walking. And I thought, that doesn't seem like Cody. So I had somebody go and chase down Joel Resiteritz, and it was great. We had a good interview. And then I was walking through the hallway back to the control room just to talk to the director or whatever, and Cody came over and was kind of listening. He's like, I'm really sorry, but I bit my tongue, and he had a big gash in his tongue that they told him to just get some gauze on, don't say anything. So he couldn't even tell me why he couldn't come out, but he found me in the hallway and apologized. I was like, that's so Cody. Like, you know, he didn't want me to feel like he just dissed me or, you know, left me hanging. So,
yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. But, what's it like being on the floor seeing the stuff he does versus being on the opposite bench watching him? I mean, is it different when some of the things he does wind up in your stick?
Well, it's a much better feeling when you don't have to put your head down because he does something against your own team. Yeah. It's a much better feeling when you're the one scoring the goal because he finds you in a crazy way. And I think that's one thing that he doesn't get a lot of credit for is his vision is incredible. He'll put balls where no one else can really catch it, and he'll all be able to grab it because he put it somewhere. And we're working on that a lot. We haven't been crazy successful in that, and that's just me trying to figure out each other. He does stuff that is kind of two steps ahead of what other people are thinking, the defender. So stuff like that is cool. It reminds me a lot of playing with Sean Williams. Right. Sean Williams, when I get called up, or the last year I played there with him, I'd set a pick and turn, and the ball's already in my stick. And it's kind of the same thing. It's just trying to get back to used to that.
Yeah.
And it's pretty cool.
A goal you scored the other night against Georgia last week, he basically threw you a pass where you were covered. You weren't, I wouldn't say you were open per se, but you had the defender on kind of your left shoulder and your stick, you know, obviously off to your right shoulder. And he threw a hard sidearm pass through some traffic that, you know, landed in your stick, and you were able, he hit it. So the thing, like, people see the shot, which was a great shot. You had a step back shot, sidearm, and just put it right in the corner. But, and it was a great shot. I was like really impressed. But the pass too was, if it was in closer to you, the defender would have been able to knock it away. If it's further away, you wouldn't have been able to, because you needed to keep contact with him the defender until the ball was with you and you could get a little push off so you could create space. That ball had about a 1-inch window to be perfect, and it was hard coming across too.
Yeah, and I think he just has trust in me now after we played a couple games together now in practice, and I'm an off-ball guy, so that's where I'm my best. So he knows if I'm around there floating, one of my better aspects of my game is I kind of look like I'm not doing anything out there, and then you throw me a ball, and then before you know it, something's happening. So I think he's realized that now, and I realize he's always looking. So we're starting to get some really good chemistry, and I think it's just going to keep getting better as we play.
You said it first, but I mean, that's what how I've described your game to people. When you're in finishing junior and then when you're playing for the Redmond in senior A and getting ready for the draft, and people would say, I don't know, how high are you ranking Shanks? And I was like, I ran him like top five. I forget where I round up ranking you in my prospects. I had you in the top half of the first round. And they would say, like, but he doesn't create things. And I was like, just watch him play. And watch, like, he looks like he's not doing anything. There are times when you look like you're just kind of floating about, but it's very much just shows the sense of when to be somewhere, I think. And you just, like a Casey Bearns or somebody, you just kind of pop into a spot. And it's hard to figure out how you get open because it's not like you go really fast together. You just kind of, you drift, drift, pop. And there you are. Is that just an innate sense you've always had?
Yeah, I think it just kind of happened. Like, started lacrosse a bit young, and I kept my stick in my hand, so I feel like I have some skilled hands, but yeah, I kind of just play deceptive, and like you said, I'm no freak athlete, that's for sure, so I just play a little deceptive, and try and find backs in different ways where I try and put defenders in awkward positions, and just find lanes and spaces that maybe defender doesn't even know is there, and hopefully someone throws in the ball kind of thing.
Yeah, when you've got, you know, the guys that you're on that offense with, there's a pretty good chance that ball will wind up in your stick, especially,
you know, exactly.
Yeah, and the way you guys are moving, it was interesting, I thought, last weekend that as I talked to Cody after the game and said, you know, things have been coming, not easily, but balls are dropping. It was just flowing. And Saturday, you guys, I thought that goal that you scored was a perfect example of how hard you guys had to work for everything you were getting against Georgia.
Yeah, it was a battle, right? So our last couple of games, we had a bit of a lead, so we could play a little bit more relaxed, and we had to earn every goal we had there, and I think that Cody really turned it on at one point that got us going, and there was another point where we kind of were struggling to find a way, and our transition really helped us. Gillies was running up and down the floor like crazy. I think he really helped our offense a lot. He got about three chances, I think, just sprinting, running the ball as hard as you can. Yeah. And I think those things help. Wiz had a goal. So those are big goals where transition goals, it helps the offense get a little bit mojo going as well. And the defense, it excites the whole crowd. So those ones are big. And like you said, every goal is earned.
Yeah. So looking at the rookie scoring race, you've moved up into second. You're 5 points ahead of Eric Fennell, 6 points ahead of Dan Craig, and then there's a bit of a drop to Zach Currier, who's a transition guy. So really, you've just got your sights set on Josh Byrne, who got a bit of a quicker start than you. He's got 43 points. So you've got to make up 17 points. You've got six games left. So you have to make up 3 points per game. Can you do that?
I mean, yeah, that's possible.
And that's scoring 3 points more per game than Josh Byrne scores.
Yeah. I mean, that's not my goal, but I mean, it's just the way of the game, right? Yeah. Anything could happen, and I'm just going to play every game, one at a game, trying to get wins and do anything I can to help the team. And I think a big stat that people don't look at is loose balls, and those are a big one that help our offense a ton, we've seen in percentages. So, I mean, I'm just going to look at that stuff. Doesn't really matter. I want to get wins because we drop a few here and anything could happen. So I'm more looking to playoffs because I would like a ring.
Right. And obviously the big six games down the stretch are going to make all the difference in the world. And one of the things, I mean, you always want to be peaking as you head into the playoffs. Right now you guys are on a nice roll, but like you said, you guys are working on not just maintaining what you're doing, but getting better, but getting more consistent, and really being ready when May comes around, April comes around, and it's time to play the one game elimination games.
Yeah, we want to be playing our best lacrosse come playoffs. I think we're getting better every week. As you can see, we're definitely getting better every week. I mean, we're getting wins, and we're getting tough wins, and we're getting ground balls. And so as long as we keep getting better every week and we're going into playoffs with our best lacrosse, our best chemistry, our most energy, and the most trust in each other, I think we're unstoppable. I mean, come playoffs, it's anyone's game, too. Everyone starts back at 0-0, so the regular season doesn't even matter.
And it never hurts when you're going into games like that to have arguably as good a goaltender as has ever played in the National Lacrosse League back between the pipes at age 36 or whatever Vino is now, playing just about as well as ever. And he's close to the form he was at when he won, you know, 4 Goalie of the Year awards.
Yeah, I mean, Vino's playing like no other. He's playing like a top of his game. We got Graham in there, who's probably, arguably, one of the best defenders in the league. Like you said, Billy, Lordy, the whole group of them, Sid. Like, we have such a fantastic group back there, both young and veteran. Those guys all know how to win games. They know how to win tournaments. They know how to win championships. So I think we have a great group going into playoffs come that time. And with Vino playing the way he is, I mean, it's anyone's game.
Final question. We just want to check out. I know you wanted to look your best for the interview. How are the locks? I know we had to schedule the interview around your haircut today. How did it come out?
Not bad. It was a good haircut, I believe. My trainer actually hooked me up with a guy down here, and he's been awesome. So got a nice fresh cut to go down to Calgary, beat some Calgary ass.
Look good, feel good, play good, right?
Exactly.
Thanks for taking the time. It's always fun to talk to you, and good luck down the last half dozen games of the season and into the playoff stretch.
Appreciate it. Thank you for having me.
All right, lacrosse friends, that'll wrap things up for this week's episode of Vox LaBeat on NLL Radio, also available on iTunes through Inside Lacrosse Podcasts. I'm Stephen Stamp, your host. Thanks very much to Rich Lisk and to Austin Shanks. Hope you enjoyed the conversations with them as much as I did. Maybe learn something about the process that teams go through when they're considering trades. Next week on Box the Beat, it will be a very special episode. John Grant Jr.'s number 24 is being raised to the rafters of the Pepsi Center by the Colorado Mammoth. I will speak to John Grant Jr. and Tracy Kolesky together, Dan Carey, Teddy Jenner, and other people who have played with, against, been around the game, around John Grant Jr., sharing some memories, and it'll be a special John Grant Jr. jersey retirement celebration episode of Box LaBeat on NLL Radio.